The MarTech Podcast is a proud member of the I Hear Everything Podcast Network. Looking to launch or scale your podcast? I Hear Everything delivers podcast production, growth, and monetization solutions that transform your words into profit. Ready to give your brand a voice? Then visit IHearEverything.com.
From advertising to software as a service to data.
Across all of our programs and clients, we've seen a 55 to 65% open rate.
Getting brands authentically integrated into content performs better than TV advertising.
Typical lifespan of an article is about 24 to 36 hours.
If we're reaching out to the right person with the right message and a clear call to action, then it's just a matter of timing.
Welcome to the MarTech Podcast, a member of the I Hear Everything Podcast Network. In this podcast, you'll hear the stories of world-class marketers that use technology to drive business results and achieve career success. Here's the host of the MarTech Podcast, Benjamin Shapiro.
Welcome to the MarTech Podcast. I'm Benjamin Shapiro, the executive producer of the MarTech Podcast, and today we've got a special episode for you, which is going to be guest hosted by Juan Mendoza, the author of the MarTech Weekly Newsletter. Juan is a recovering MarTech consultant turned creator who writes an amazing weekly newsletter about the MarTech industry, and I'm thrilled to invite him and some of his friends to take the mic and share their knowledge with you, our loyal MarTech Podcast listeners. All right, here's a special episode of the MarTech Podcast, guest hosted by Juan Mendoza, the author of the MarTech Weekly Newsletter.
Hello, hello, marketeers. My name is Juan Mendoza from the MarTech Weekly Newsletter. And today we're going to discuss ad tech, AI, and the future of marketing. And there is no one better to talk about these topics right now than Rio Longacre, who is the Managing Director of Advertising and Marketing Transformation at Slalom. Slalom is a purpose-led global business and a technology consulting company. So today, Rio and I are going to discuss, well, is every company now an ad tech company? There has been so much movement in the ad tech space over the past 5 years where companies that you would never even think of are becoming advertising businesses. So Rio and I are going to unpack that and what that means for marketers and advertisers. So here's my conversation with Rio Longacre, the Managing Director of Advertising and Marketing Transformation at Slalom. Hi, Rio. How are you doing today?
Hey, Juan. Well, doing well. Great to see you here. Always been an admirer from quite literally the other side of the globe here of your newsletter and all that you're doing. So excited to have a conversation today for sure.
Yeah, I'm very excited as well. I mean, I've been following Slalom for quite some time, and it is a fascinating business in how you approach marketing transformation. And I guess that's our topic for today, which is a lot of businesses are transforming into advertising businesses. And Eric Seifert from the Mobile Dev Momo coined this phrase, which has now become very popular, which is everything is an ad network. If it's a retailer, or if you're a marketplace, or if you're Uber, or if you're even software businesses like Intuit, are all launching ad businesses. I think it means that marketers has more opportunities to drive awareness for their own products or services, to get reach and awareness in places that they traditionally haven't been able to. But what have you seen in this space, this evolution between digital advertising and traditional industries and ad tech? What is that juncture looking like for you right now?
It's a really interesting time. And I love that, just that very famous article, the blog post he came out with a few years, I think it was 2020, right? About everything being an ad network, Eric Seifert. Prophetic to say the least, and I think proven more correct every day as we see more and more ad networks popping up, whether it's Uber trying to successfully create an ad network, all the retail media networks. Every day you see another one. And as a management consulting firm, we're constantly being hit up by these organizations, whether they're rental car companies, airlines, obviously retailers, really anyone who has a lot of first party data and who has a lot of traffic, they're seeing this as a great way to potentially monetize that. So it's an interesting time. We're being asked from people, whether it's, should we create an ad network? Or many of them are saying, we want to. Can you help us do it? Can you help us pick the right tools? Some are coming at it maybe a little earlier. Should we do this? Or we want to do this. Can you help us define it? Like, what would we do? And maybe the corollary to what Seifert wrote a few years ago, and this is why I wrote that article that was in Fast Company a few weeks ago that I think you referenced earlier, was that I think everyone wants to monetize first-party data. And why is that happening? They're doing that because of privacy laws. They're doing it because of cookie deprecation. They're doing it because of all of these trends that are splintering the world of digital media, making it possible to do that, right? It's not just like the duopoly anymore, the triopoly, right, with Amazon ads. I mean, there's a bunch of different sources. I think it's much easier to create a place where people might buy media, and everyone's realizing that. But then I think more broadly than that, the trends are pushing a lot of these things in-house and really forcing many brands to do this anyway. So interesting time. And I guess the title of the article I wrote was Everything's an Ad Tech Company, which is kind of what I'm seeing happening. So not everyone's going to be an ad network necessarily, although they might want to achieve the same thing, which is monetizing their assets. First and foremost, so that is first party data, probably especially in post-cookie world, right? The most valuable asset a brand has. How do they monetize that? And the answer for many of them is let's build a retail media network or a commerce media network, right? Let's actually sell inventory on our website. But easier said than done. I mean, I was approached by one of the big platforms recently, like asking me to connect them with any, let's put it this way, retail or commerce media networks that were not doing well, that were built. And, you know, it's not like you build it, they come, right? They built it and no one's knocking on the door to buy inventory. So I think we're seeing a lot of the people who jumped in, some are doing extremely well. Some are finding hey, it's not easy building an ad sales team. Even if you have, let's say, the ad network, even if you have some place to, some kind of self-serve like DSP portal almost where brands can or buyers can go in and do a lot of the things self-service, it's not as easy as just building it. You actually have to get there and create demand and know how to price things. It's not easy is what we're finding.
I can imagine that it's a massive shift for a business because it's not only opening up a whole new business line, which is hard enough in many enterprise businesses. You know, you need to get executive buy-in, you need to build the product. It takes many, many years to do that in most cases. But it's not only that, it's the challenge of transforming your own business to be able to offer an advertising product. And that means being really good with analytics. It means being very good with how you're managing your data, enriching it, creating customer profiles, being able to offer those profiles or the aggregation of segments to advertisers. There's also the question of, do you make it self-service? For example, Walmart, I think they've now offered a self-service ad tech portal where you can actually run your own ads, similar to sort of Meta and Google. So there's all of these questions because your customer changes, you know, especially for retail, your customer changes, understanding of the purpose and the value of analytics changes, the commercialization of data beyond just personalization or lifecycle marketing changes drastically as well. So it's one of those things where businesses could dip their toe in the water, but it seems far harder than most people realize.
Yeah, agreed. And to your point, it's a different business, right? So let's say you're a retailer, right? You're selling different brands, products on your website. I mean, the products are going to have whatever margin they have, which is usually pretty low. You start selling, it's like you get addicted to crack, right? It's like you start selling the online ads and those have incredible, I mean, like 85% margin, maybe more. That becomes very attractive. Let's sell more of these. Let's double down in that. Next thing you know, you're actually impacting the sales that's driving all the traffic to your website. So figuring out how to have a virtuous cycle, not the opposite, right? I think is what a lot of people are thinking now. Like, how do we run this new business, but not run it in opposition to what we have and make it like symbiotic? So we're actually driving a better user experience on the website, yet at the same time, we're able to monetize and sell inventory to marketers is interesting.
Yeah, it is fascinating. And I think that right now we're in that juncture of, okay, well, this is actually good for the industry, I think, because it increases competition. So I think we drastically need more competition in the ad tech space, purely because the likes of Meta and of Google, and even by Amazon to some extent, they've grown huge ad businesses. And by virtue of being making it very easy to access audiences, access data, and do targeted advertising in one interface. Now, all of these new platforms, whether it be Walmart or, as I said, Intuit or other gaming platforms, and there's a whole variety there of different advertising options for marketers. How are you seeing the flip of this, which is marketers embracing channels, looking to drive advertising, to drive growth through these sort of new nascent ad tech networks?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's getting challenging for, let's say, a brand manager or a head of media or an ad buyer. I think what was easy about the days of the duopoly is you really only went to two places, maybe a couple more places, right? But most of the ad spend was just in Google Meta, right? Now, what do you do? There's 15, there's 20, and it's getting super confusing. You're going to have your ad buyers trained on how many different DSPs now, how many ad portals, right? I mean, it's getting really, really confusing. And what I'm even seeing is some agencies are building these special teams. Oh, we'll have a team for retail media. But then, okay, then that's starting to splinter. You know, there's a Kroger team, there's the Walmart team, there's the Amazon ads team. And they all use different KPIs. I mean, even the data, using your API to pull data out of it into a dashboard, they use different terminology, right? So even building a data model to support that is, I think, not really cut and dried as we're seeing. So one interesting thing in terms of ad tech investment that I'm noticing a lot of is on the agency and holdco side. is because of this splintering, right? Okay, so we're going to have 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 sources, right? Places where we're going to be buying media for our big clients. Is it possible now to build one interface, right? Where people can go, where you can do everything from analytics to understand media performance, but also maybe even upload assets, upload select inventory, select audiences. So I'm seeing interest now in building solutions that begin to aggregate that. The concept of a meta DSP is kind of returning, which I think is really interesting. And I'm seeing some, I think a lot of investment there we'd never really would have seen before.
A special thanks to our presenting sponsor, Mutinex. Ready to take your team from I think to I know? Then join brands like Samsung, ING, and Asahi who make better marketing decisions with Mutinex. Mutinex Growth OX, the marketing mix modeling platform that makes measuring ROI fast, easy, and cost-effective. Request a demo at mutinex.co. That's mutinex.co. Time for a one-minute break to hear from our presenting sponsor, Mutinex. In 1919, John Wanamaker said, "Half the money I spend on advertising is wasted. I just don't know which half." Well, the advertising landscape has changed since then, and instead of reaching your audience on two channels, you're probably reaching them on 20. Turns out John didn't know how easy he had it. But that doesn't mean that you should give up on striving towards marketing effectiveness. No matter how complex your marketing strategy is, Mutinex Growth OX is the market mix modeling platform that measures the impact of marketing on your bottom line. Mutinex's market mix modeling platform calibrates your insights against the latest market conditions so you can make media and marketing investment decisions confidently and quickly. Ready to take your team from I think to I know? Then join brands like Samsung, ING, and Asahi who make better marketing decisions with Mutinex. Mutinex Growth OX, your best decision starts here. To learn more about Mutinex, go to mutinex.co. That's mutinex.co. Okay, here's the rest of today's interview.
So there's more specific types of audiences that marketers can access now. And I think one thing that we're perhaps not really talking about just yet is this ongoing maturity of companies to be able to offer these ad tech products. We're not talking about just running banner ads on a website page. You know, that's not what we're talking about here when it comes to retail media and building ad networks. No, we're talking about, yeah, meta Google level sophistication in terms of selecting your targeting criteria, getting granular into who's going to be in your segment, looking at transactional behavioral data, but also demographic as well. There is actually a lot of sophistication in these ad tech networks, but it means that marketers have to learn these things. They have to learn the specifics of Kroger, the specifics of Walmart, the specifics of Amazon or AWS. I think that's something that is currently a challenge to this whole everything is an ad network space, which is, yeah, marketers just and advertisers don't have the time to learn all these ad tech networks. I think IPG Media Brands, they launched a basically like a service platform where they're learning all of the intricacies of every retail media network so that they can offer a single service to a brand. And I'm seeing more of that in the consulting advertising world as well. But how do you see marketers addressing that? Is it a challenge dealing with a variety of different schemas or different approaches to advertising with these different platforms?
It is. I mean, I think the big burden right now is really going on many of the agencies, right? It's challenging for them. It's definitely challenging for marketers. In fact, I had one client of mine, a pretty large global CPG firm. They had in-housed everything, in-housed ad ops, marketing ops, all the platforms, even the ad buying one in-house. And it's interesting. So they, because of this splintering, and it was one of the big drivers that made them decide, okay, we're going to push it out back to the agencies. I don't know if called outhouse is the right term. I don't think it maybe makes sense, but they did decide that they were going to push the ad buying back because it was too difficult because of the splintering. And also, I mean, I think that's one piece, but another piece I think people forget about is, especially, you know, here in the US, we tend to forget is a lot of media buying, when you look at ex-US, right, especially, is still traditional. Even here, we have terrestrial radio, you have television, you still have some print, right? So out of home. So I think that's where it becomes even more challenging in the holdcos, the big globals. That's where they continue to have like a huge value proposition that it might be a struggle for an in-house team. So I think it is challenging for marketers. In-housing continues to generally accelerate, but I think we're seeing many people hit the pause button on bringing ad buying in-house because of the splintering that I think does tend to favor the big agencies and holdcos.
Mm-hmm. So I think there is a good incentive here for the holdcos, which is basically the group that owns a variety of agencies and consultancies globally. Usually they're global companies, to really learn this stuff, to really be certified in these various ad tech networks, because there has to be some kind of consolidation. You know, like the success of Facebook and Google, et cetera, is that they just consolidated a lot of data and people into one advertising offering. And that makes a lot of sense for marketers just because of the lack of time, the lack of capability to learn so many different platforms. But let's talk a bit about privacy here. Data privacy regulations is one trigger point for why we're seeing all these new ad tech networks because, well, everyone knows that third-party cookies is set to die with Google deprecating third-party cookies in the Chrome browser. Now, knowing that, there's been this rush to first-party data. And all of these companies that are traditional e-commerce, retail businesses going, oh, actually, we have a wealth of website traffic. We have a wealth of data. Now, I want to know, how do you see data privacy regulations influencing this space? Third-party cookies is going away in part because of data privacy regulations, but also sort of mass consumer concern for their own privacy. Are we going to step into another rakia, so to speak, when it comes to building these ad networks and a lot of new players building advertising services where they may not necessarily have the experience around data privacy and regulation?
I think that many of these solutions I'm seeing, ironically enough, right, for many of these cookieless solutions, these universal IDs, I really don't know if they're any more privacy compliant than third-party cookies were, to be honest. You know, if you're mashing up data that maybe you asked for an email and you did get some consented data, but you're combining it with maids and mobile addresses and IP addresses that I don't think anyone probably consented to create these identity graphs. I don't know if that's really any better, to be honest with you. But to answer the question, yes, privacy regulations are driving. I mean, that's what drove cookie deprecation. At least that's what Google says, right? You could maybe argue that they're doing it just to protect their own commercial interests. I mean, they would deny that. But for sure, they're driving a lot of this. GDPR being the first one, and DMA and DSA in the EU. And then, you know, obviously, Australia has a tough one. They're going to be, I think it's being debated right now, if I'm not mistaken. UK may or may not ever have one. We have CCPA and CPRA, which really have become the law of the land here in the US, even though they're out of California. California is 40 million people, right? It's a harbinger state, as we usually consider it. So I think that's what's driving a lot of these decisions. And it's funny that in California, they actually said yesterday, okay, brands you've had, marketers you've had, you know, a couple of years to figure this out, fines are going to start, and they will start. And it's funny too, I remember I was working with a beauty company. This is a couple of years before GDPR. And I remember I was just doing an ad tech assessment. We do a lot of this. They come on, like, look at our stack, tell us what we have, what we don't have. And everyone thinks they have gaps, but usually they have too much stuff. So we were doing this. I remember one of the recommendations, which was a little out of scope. I remember telling this organization, well, you know, look, I'm not an attorney. I can't give you legal advice, but based on my understanding of this law that's going to pass next year, I don't know if you'd be able to actually, if a DSAR, you know, domain subject access request comes in where someone's basically saying, tell me everything you know about me and give it to me within 45 days, right? I don't know if you'd be able to comply because your data's scattered, right? And they say, oh, we're good. Don't worry. Like, no one's going to request any DSARs. When that happens, we'll figure it out. You know, guess what? They didn't figure it out and they got fined a lot of money. And so those fines will increase. The EU is getting more serious now that DMA and DSA are beginning to be enforced, and you're going to see it globally. In fact, you're in neck of the woods there, Juan. So I did some great work with TV New Zealand. This was actually published on, I think, New Zealand Herald, and a couple others picked it up. We actually, because of privacy laws, we built this really cool solution where advertisers could upload their first-party data into a clean room. We would do a match, but it would be with an anonymized data set, and then we'd actually identify an audience within a CDP, within TV New Zealand's CDP, and they're using Adobe Experience Platform. And then we could run a targeted advertising campaign based specifically on that in a privacy-compliant way. And lots of brands, it was great. I think 12 brands signed up for the pilot. And I asked Rob Hutchinson, who's the head of digital there, said, you know, why has this been so successful? And you know what he said? He said, ad sellers, they love to sell new things. And for the brand buyers and the agencies, I think OMR is the big agency that drove a lot of this. This was something they could tell their clients, this is privacy safe. You're ahead of the curve here. So it's driving a lot of behaviors, but I think it's creating opportunities.
I think with every new regulatory pressure, there's always opportunities, right? I remember back when GDPR was established, what, 7, 8 years ago now? Wow, feels like a long time, where there was all these consultancies that popped up out of nowhere, offering companies the ability to navigate how to comply with GDPR, right? And so there's always possibilities, always opportunities. But that's a really great story and a fantastic way to wrap up our first episode talking about why everything is an ad network and every company is now an ad tech company. An insightful conversation, really diving into the shifts in advertising incentives, but more importantly, how marketers can leverage that for their own growth and their brand. Okay, so that wraps up our first episode of the MarTech podcast. Thanks to Rio Longacre, the Managing Director of Advertising and Marketing Transformation at Slalom, for joining us. Catch us tomorrow in part two of our interview, which we'll publish. Rio and I are going to discuss avoiding the AI swirl. And it does sound a bit like an ice cream, but we promise you it has a lot of great insights. But if you can't wait until the next episode, you'd like to learn more about Rio, you can find his LinkedIn profile in our show notes. You can also contact him on Twitter, where his handle is at Rio Longacre, one word. You can visit his company website at salom.com. Rio, thank you so much for joining me on this fascinating conversation around ad tech.
My pleasure, Juan. Looking forward to the next one.
Okay, that wraps up this episode of the MarTech Podcast. Thanks to our guest host, Juan Mendoza, the author of the MarTech Weekly Newsletter. If you'd like to get in touch with Juan, you could find a link to his LinkedIn profile in our show notes, or you can contact him on Twitter. His handle is Juan Mendoza, but it's spelled crazy pants. It's JU4NMEND0Z4, or it's a little easier to just visit his company's website, which is themartechweekly.com. Just one more link in our show notes I'd like to tell you about. If you didn't have a chance to take notes while you were listening to this podcast, head over to martechpod.com, where we have summaries of all of our episodes and contact information for our guests. You can also subscribe to our weekly newsletters, and you can even send us your topic suggestions or your marketing questions, which we'll answer live on our show. Of course, you can always reach out on social media. Our handle is MarTechPod, MARTECHPOD, on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Or you can contact me directly. My handle is Ben J. Schaap, BenJShap. And if you haven't subscribed yet and you want a daily stream of marketing and technology knowledge in your podcast feed, we're going to publish an episode every day this year. So hit the subscribe button in your podcast app, and we'll be back in your feed tomorrow morning. All right, that's it for today. But until next time, my advice is to just focus on keeping your customers happy.
Thanks for listening to the MarTech Podcast, an I Hear Everything production. Looking to launch or scale a podcast like this one for your brand? Then visit iheareverything.com.